We hope that you didn't have boring old toast for breakfast this morning. But if you did, today's Please Explain may inspire a whole new approach to your mornings. Breakfast cereal is the subject of today's Please Explain, and I am joined by three distinguished guests, Snap, Crackle, and Pop. No, that's not true. I am joined by two guests, Andy Smith, a food historian and author of 17 books, the most recent of which, Eating History, 30 Turning Points in the History in the Making of American Cuisine. It's published by Columbia University Press, and he teaches in the Food Studies Department of the New School University. Welcome. And Edward Shavi, who is known as Mr. Breakfast. He is the founder and director of the Mr. Breakfast website, as well as the Cereal Project, a database for cataloging all the cereals ever made in the United States, some 1,200 and counting. Welcome, Edwin.
Hey, thank you. Call me Eddie.
Eddie. Andy.
Yes.
So what cereal?
Cereal is nothing but seeds of grasses that have been domesticated. So the grass family is very large, and we have all sorts of seeds that have been domesticated out of that. Virtually all of the early civilizations were based on seeds from grass.
Really? And Eddie, are all cereals made from these grains? Is that it?
I think in the simplest sense, you could say yes. All ready-to-eat cereals, yeah, and hot cereals.
And when did people start eating cereal as a breakfast in particular?
About 20,000 years ago.
But it was particularly as a breakfast?
Well, it would be consumed whenever you wanted. Whenever you were hungry, you would eat it, yeah.
Right.
It
we're focusing here on breakfast.
Well, now we're talking more 19th century.
More 19th century. And what were the first breakfast cereals?
That depends.
The very first breakfast cereal was this thing called granola. And I think we can date
is that true? I was just talking to John Hodgman, who was making everything up, so you have to assure me that all the stuff you say is true. Is that really something called granola?
Ready-to-eat cereals, we can kind of date back to 1863 when the very first one was created, and that led to everything we see in the boxes today.
Why did cereal, let me ask this to Andy, why did cereal become associated with the breakfast as opposed to some other meal of the day?
It started as a vegetarian conspiracy. Vegetarians were very upset with the types of foods that Americans ate in general, but particularly with breakfast, which frequently would include lots of lard, lots of butter, lots of pork, lots of beef.
Bacon and eggs.
And bacon and eggs and things that the vegetarians would not have consumed. So it really starts off with vegetarians trying to provide an alternative that they thought was not only better from an ethical standpoint, but better from a health standpoint.
Eddie, is that your take on it?
Yeah, absolutely. America was really suffering from a universal stomach ache. So a group of people got together and tried to figure out some foods that's going to help dyspepsia, it was called, and cereal was the result.
Andy, what are some of the interesting early breakfast cereals that you are familiar with?
Well, if we're talking commercial breakfast cereals. The most interesting one to me is Quaker Oats. Quaker Oats is the first real commercial national breakfast cereal. It's in a beautiful box, almost the same box that you have today.
I was going to say, the Quaker Oats box seems so iconic and so... And I guess I probably have seen old ones that look almost the same.
It's constant. The picture is constant. The literature changes on the back, but it's constant. Yeah. I think, and that really creates a whole change in American food,
does that come in?
It comes in the 1880s, and it really becomes popular in 1891 when Henry Crowell, who's the manager for the company, takes this express from Iowa all the way to Portland, giving out small boxes of Quaker Oats and having kids go ahead of him and saying this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, well, unsliced bread.
They didn't sell sliced bread.
Unsliced bread,
right? Yes.
Yeah.
Eddie, what are some of your favorite really early breakfast cereals?
It's kind of a simple answer, but my all-time favorite from the early days is Corn Flakes, just because as far as boxed ready-to-eat cereals go, that's the cereal that really created a boom. Once Corn Flakes were created, all these companies came on the scene, and before you know it, there's 130 brands of Corn Flakes by 1910.
And when were Corn Flakes first marketed?
1906, Kellogg's takes responsibility for that.
We're talking with Andy Smith, who is a food historian, including the author most recently of Eating History, 30 Turning Points in the Making of American Cuisine, and Eddie Shavi. Did I have that right? Shavi?
Yeah.
Eddie Shavi, who is known as Mr. Breakfast, the founder and director of the Mr. Breakfast website, as well as the Cereal Project, a database cataloging all the cereals ever made in the United States. And we are going to eat some cereal later. We're going to have a little taste test.
Do we have to wait?
Well, yes, we do have to wait, because that's going to be our big finish. But we're going to take your calls, too, on the subject of breakfast cereals. We're at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-9692. That's 433-WNYC. So, Eddie, why did you start to do a website with with 1,200 cereals on it? What possessed you to have that exotic interest?
I think as nobody else was doing it, it became a major project. It started as a text list. I gathered pictures. Before I knew it, I have 1,300 pages right now, and it's just massive.
And what Kellogg is obviously a key figure in all this. Andy, talk a little about the Kellogg Company.
Well, the Kellogg Company is really based on John Harvey Kellogg and his brother, Will Kellogg. And their interest is obviously to create, they're vegetarians, their interest is to create foods that can be served first at their sanitarium and then that they can sell to those who've been through their sanitarium and also to other health food stores, which were common in the 1890s. So they began making a whole series of different types of cereals. John Harvey Kellogg is the one that renames granola, and that's one of the things that would be served at the sanitarium. He runs into a man by the name of Henry Perkey, and Henry Perkey's got this really great idea. You're going to put wheat through two rollers. You're going to put a shredded machine on the other side, and then you're going to put a biscuit machine after that, and the end product, of course, will be shredded wheat. John Harvey Kellogg loves this, and so he starts to get the rollers of his own. I got to have some of those, and he begins putting all sorts of things, peanuts being one, ending up with peanut butter. And another
peanut butter. That's how peanut butter gets commercially produced for the first time.
Yeah, John Harvey Kellogg is interested in putting an alternative to cow's butter, so his alternative is peanut butter, and it really also starts off as a vegetarian effort that seeps into the mainstream society in a very short period of time. So he starts rolling things, and one of the things that he rolls is corn, and that ends up with cornflakes eventually.
Now, Eddie, this is something that came up as we were preparing this discussion, and that I have to say is something that has always fascinated me as a avid Chex consumer, CHEX, is how do they make them look so perfect and so detailed? It's sort of like the mystery behind the Triscuit cracker. How do you make something like that?
You know... The answer is that's a secret. Companies that make those, General Mills, the old Ralston company, keep that a really closely guarded secret. Most people believe it's like two sheets of dough, and then pokers come in, and then it's baked. But they keep that tight to the chest.
So it will remain a mystery. We have an interesting call from John in Bergen County who wants to know, what's the difference? You often see on menus steel-cut oatmeal and, I guess, some lesser form of oatmeal. But I never understand. What does steel-cut mean?
They actually have, initially, in the 1870s, the oat itself would go through a machine, and it actually had steel blades that would shave off each of the little flakes. So when you look at the flakes of oatmeal, for instance, those are the things that go through steel-cut. And there, it was a huge advance. Prior to the time, no real American would have consumed oats. That was for horses and for animal feed. And here, in this case, it was a man by the name of Schumacher that invents a process of using the steel blades that cuts this up and makes it a more public breakfast food.
Eddie, let's move to the dark side of the story, which is the addition of sugar.
Okay.
When does the happy, healthy cornflake begin to be polluted yet commercially exploited by the addition of sugar?
Well, sugar actually started getting into the early cereal recipes. That was actually a big rift between the Kellogg brothers, is Will Kellogg wanted to include sugar just to make it taste a little bit better, and John Harvey would have nothing to do with that. So sugar, to some degree, was in it. I think probably what we want to talk about is around 1949, well, actually, we could make that earlier, in the late 30s, when cereals became sugar-coated, and that kind of started with a cereal called Ranger Joe Wheat Honeys from Nabisco, the first sugar-coated cereal.
Was sugar cereal always associated, at least as it is in my mind, with children, or were sugared cereals marketed to adults as well, Andy?
Early on, sugar was added to virtually every commercial cereal, and the target was adults. It was never children until the 1920s when Wheaties comes along, the Breakfast of Champions, and other products that began to target children as a major buyer for their products. So as they shifted from adults to children, they said children like more sugar, and the sugar goes up not just in 1949, but it continues to increase all the way up until that time, and then you have the major almost 50% sugar cereals that we have today.
Eddie, before we get to our taste test, let's just talk about what are the most popular cereals today?
Well, actually, at the Cereal Project, we keep a list of the top 100 where people can vote. Right now I'm going to go through the top five. It's Captain Crunch, number one, Frosted Flakes, number
now,
three,
Captain
Honey
Crunch,
Nut Cheerios.
I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt. Go ahead and then I'll ask.
Number
Start
four
over.
Is Lucky Charms, and number five is Wheaties.
So repeat the list again.
We've got Captain Crunch at number one, Frosted Flakes, Honey Nut Cheerios, Lucky Charms, and Wheaties.
So four of the five are sugared cereals.
Well, to a degree, they're all sugared cereals, but yeah.
Now, Andy, is that consistent with your experience that sugared cereals are now even bigger than the old standbys?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why many children just love those breakfast cereals. It's to get that sugar high in the morning.
Now, is Captain Crunch an actual military figure?
I don't know. Eddie, do you?
Is Horatio Q. Crunch, and he was a character that was created first, and then a cereal was created around him. It's kind of cool.
Is that true, really?
Has there ever been
an actual Tony the Tiger?
No.
Just the animated fella. Okay.
But he was preceded by a kangaroo.
What do you mean he was preceded by a kangaroo?
The previous image for Tony the Tiger, Frosted Flakes, was a kangaroo, and now only later on did Tony come on.
I think that's a big improvement. Okay, let's move to our taste test now. The crack staff of the Leonard Lopate Show has assembled three cereals for us to sample, including has brought here a quart of whole milk, which is not something I usually drink, but I'm going to add milk to my cereal and then give Andy his.
Thank you.
Eddie, through the miracle of telecommunications, has assembled his own taste test where he is. These are our three cereals. We have Grape Nuts, Rice Krispies, and Lucky Charms. Now, I am kind of a Grape Nuts eater, and the question I've always had about Grape Nuts is, has there ever been a food that looks more like dirt than Grape Nuts? I mean, who could possibly have decided to eat this for the first time? What's the history of Grape Nuts?
This is a theft on one of the Kellogg cereals that was served at the sanitarium. And it's C.W. Post, who's supposedly ill, who goes to the sanitarium, picks up lots of the recipes, starts producing Postum, which is one product that was similar to what was served at the sanitarium. And then the second product that he comes, a commercial product, is Grape Nuts. And it really is what granola or granula would have looked like in the 1890s. So what you think of granola today has nothing to do with what it originally was. So he stole the idea from granola, from the Kellogg's, and then mass-produced it.
Now, Eddie, one of the things I've always wondered about Grape Nuts is, does it have anything to do with grapes?
The name stems from actually grape sugar, which C.W. Post head in it. It was grape sugar gives us the grapes, and then it's got sort of a nutty look and a nutty aroma and taste gives us the nuts, grape nuts.
I see. It certainly looks like it hasn't changed basically ever. Is that true?
The base recipe is the same. It's wheat and barley at its core. In the simplest sense, it's the same.
Now, let's move on to our taste test of Rice Krispies. Now, Rice Krispies is legendary not just for its taste, but for its sound. First of all, now, what are Rice Krispies? Boy, they are really good. You know, this is just an outstanding cereal. I don't think Rice Krispies gets entirely the respect it deserves. But anyway, Eddie, what are Rice Krispies made out of?
Rice Krispies are made out of rice. You know, puffed rice, right?
Not personally. I mean, I've seen the box, but yes.
Well, puffed rice is shot out of a puffing gun, and this is what makes it puff, like popcorn.
Well, wait a second. What is a puffing gun? I've never heard of a puffing gun.
A puffing gun is basically a cannon. As a matter of fact, when puffed rice was first introduced at the World Fair, they actually shot cereal out of the cannon, and the crowd went crazy for it.
As well they might. And so, I'm sorry, what is Rice Krispies again?
So Rice Krispies, as opposed to being just rice put in the puffing gun, it's rice that's cooked and dried first, and that's what gives us the more crunchy texture and the sort of cracks in the cereal wall.
Yeah, you take rice, you put a lot of pressure on it, and then you release the pressure, and that's what puffs it up.
And this is done at obviously a vast scale. All right, let's move on to our final test here, which is Lucky Charms, which I have to say has to be one of the ugliest foods ever made.
Come on,
I mean, this
no.
is really hideous. I have to say, even as a kid, I didn't like Lucky Charms.
You had a deprived youth.
With sweet surprises, but I remember the ads. Now, what are those things in Lucky Charms which are all these colored, not found in nature? Eddie, what is
you
that?
You can dig it.
Actually, Lucky Charms is the first cereal to ever do this. Marshmallows, in the industry, they called them Marbits. And this was 1964 that Lucky Charms first came on the scene. And the interesting thing is this cereal was created by somebody just fooling around and putting in. Do you guys know what circus peanuts are?
Do I know what circus peanuts are? I assume it's more complicated than peanuts that are sold at the circus.
It's basically a marshmallow, a hard marshmallow that looks like a peanut. And somebody crumbled it up into what we believe is Cheerios, and that was how Lucky Charms was created.
I mean, here's just a basic question. Well, you know what? Let's take a break first. But when we come back, I'm going to ask a question that several of our listeners are asking, which is any of this any good for you? I mean, where is the nutritional value here? We're talking with Andy Smith, a food historian and teacher at the Food Studies Department at the New School University, and Mr. Breakfast, otherwise known as Eddie Chavez, the founder of the Cereal Project. We're discussing this week's Please Explain Breakfast Cereals. We'll take your calls at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. I'm Jeffrey Toobin. Please stay with us. We're back talking about breakfast cereals with Andy Smith of New School University, and Eddie Chavez of the Cereal Project. Okay, so let's talk about the dirty subject of nutrition.
What?
Which of course is raised by the subject of Lucky Charms, which looks so awful and so bad for you. But is it? I mean, how bad or good is sugared cereal for you, an adult, or for a kid?
Go ahead, Eddie. You dig that?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't be too hard on our buddy Lucky Charms because they've really improved it a lot. The cereal companies really take the lead in adding whole grains. Any sort of health revolution, when we had to get rid of trans fat, the cereal company was on top of that. So cereals get a really bad rap from these horrible sugar days, but you're really going to find healthy options in the cereal aisle.
Here's a question from Mike of in White Plains. Mike, you there?
Yeah, hi. Yes, I am. I had to pull over to ask this burning question. Why are all cereals the same calories and generally the same nutrition readouts? They're always 110 calories per serving, and it makes it very hard to believe one is more nutritious than the other.
What's the answer there?
Well, I think the serving size frequently changes between cereals, so you don't really know.
You can't compare it
until you get to the packages there. But by and large, some cereals have a lot more calories than do others, in terms of if you use equal quantities on it. And obviously, those cereals that are high in sugar, some more than 50%, and those that are high in salt and those that are high in calories are not good for people.
What's your favorite cereal?
What's my favorite cereal? Oh, boy. I probably don't eat any of the traditional breakfast cereals anymore, and if I do have cereal, it'll be a granola or something. But, you would
think that we really are on NPR. I think that really kind of settles it right there.
Well, you would think the ones that were lower in calories would at least show a different calorie count in their serving size.
Well, okay, let's just ask. Thanks for your call, Mike. Let's just talk about good and bad. What's a good, healthy cereal to eat in the morning, Andy?
High in fiber, low in salt, low in sugar. Those would be
the main. Give me some brand names.
Oh, I don't know. I eat Fiber One. I like it. But there's better things that are out there. So
my wife and I, for many, many years, have been eating Product 19.
Uh-huh.
Now, it sort of looks healthy because it's got like a 19 on it. It sounds like technical something. Is Product 19 any good?
Yeah, Product 19's good. It's hard to find these days. Good for you. But, you know, Cheerios, the most popular cereal out there, has very, very little fat and very, very little sugar. It's a real healthy option. I think that's why mothers feed it to their babies.
Well, but I read recently that the sales of Honey Nut Cheerios have actually passed Cheerios. Is that true?
Yes.
Sure, it's got sugar in it.
Cheerios, I think they're kind of jockeying for position right now, but yeah, hugely popular.
Now, is there any difference among the sugared cereals? Let's say you have a kid who really wants to eat sugared cereals. Is it better to eat Lucky Charms than Cocoa Puffs? Is it better to eat Frosted Flakes than Trix? The crack staff here has assembled some choices here. Cocoa Puffs, Trix, Honey Nut, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Ugh, looks horrible. Anyway, and any of these sugared cereals better than any of the others?
I would kind of say no if you're talking about really young children. But for really young kids, you got to avoid this stuff. And you don't want to get your kids into cereal until they can really appreciate the boxes, I think.
That's right. Okay, Susanna, you've been waiting patiently. Susanna, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I had a question about Crackling Oat Bran. It's made by Kellogg's, and I found it in the dining hall at college. I went to Bryn Mawr, and I loved it, and I used to mix it with Cheerios or just, you know, out of the bins from just making my grand old mix every day. But when I got out of school, I couldn't find it anywhere, and I tried looking for it on the Internet, and then all of a sudden, last year, it popped up in my local food town. Has anybody heard of it? And do you know how it came about, who made it, or any information?
Eddie, solve the mystery of Crackling Oat Bran.
I have heard of people having trouble finding it, but to my knowledge, it's readily available. I don't know what happened, that there was a shortage or something, but I know that my store down the street has Crackling Oat Bran right now. It's a great cereal. If you haven't tried it, it's really great.
It's amazing. And try mixing it with Cheerios because it does balance out the sweetness. It's really, really
great.
Good.
Yeah, mixer.
You know, can we discuss mixing for a second? I'm a big cereal mixer myself. My wife is appalled by that. But I got the Product 19 as kind of the base. But then I'll add Cheerios or sometimes Grape Nuts or any of the Chex family, of Wheat Chex, Rice Chex. And if I want to go crazy, I'll add some Frosted Flakes.
Great.
Is there anything better or worse to mixing cereals?
I would advise you might mix in some fruit. But mixing cereal is great. I mean, there's these companies.
I always add raisins.
Started and made whole businesses out of mixing cereal. It's really cool.
Let's go to some interesting. Here's an interesting call. Bruce from Manhattan. Here's a question.
Yes. Hello.
Yes, you're on.
Hi. Yeah. Nobody's even mentioned hot cereals. And
now you have.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of grew up from the old days of Tom Mix and Hot Ralston, which I think no longer exists. But that's sort of been taken. The place has been taken by Wheatina, at least as far as I understand it. And I go. I have a routine just because I pick these things up. Of I have Wheatina, then I have oatmeal, and it can be either the steel cut, you know, from McCann's or else Quaker. I think they're close, or if not the same. And then either cream of wheat, the 10-minute, not the quickie stuff, which probably has some chemicals in to make it quick. So it's a 10-minute cooking dryer, or Farina, which is probably the same thing.
Now, Farina let's talk about hot cereals for a second.
Yeah.
Are they, as a cereal historian, Eddie, is the history of hot cereal very different from the history of cold cereal, or is it like a separate category?
Hot cereal, I think, and Andy should probably address this because it goes way back.
Yeah, porridges and mush and things like that are go back 10, 15, 20,000 years. So it's a part of the human diet.
Mush has a kind of marketing problem, wouldn't you say?
I guess.
It's not a great name.
I've not purchased any lately. So
it's just liven up the
that's
title
what it
of
is.
Mush.
and I think that's why I acquired the name, is people had it had very little taste to it. And so when cold cereals came along, that was it. Cold cereals were initially, by the way, were not made with milk. They would have been made with water. And again, that reflects the vegetarian origin of the cold cereal.
Well, that's an interesting question. The issue of water. I was surprised in learning a little research for this that people actually put water on cold cereal as well. Is that?
Yeah. Why not?
It sounds awful. That's why not.
Well,
anyway, okay. Paul and Teaneck, you're on. There you go.
Hello. Do you know about Ezekiel 9:11? Especially if you're a Grape Nuts fan, this is like three notches up of that same type of cereal, but a much more premium product.
What do you think, Eddie? Have you heard of Ezekiel 9:11?
Oh yeah, it's becoming more and more popular. They also have a line of sprouted breads that I know are really good. Yeah, popular. I get comments about it on the Cereal Project every once in a while. People seem to dig it.
My stepfather-in-law introduced me to something called amaranth flakes, which he said were mentioned in the Bible.
No way.
Like, yeah. No,
nice try.
No, not mentioned in the Bible?
They're a New World plant.
Oh, really?
They're from South America, Central America.
Is that true?
Yep. Sorry
oh,
about
well,
that.
Sorry,
nice,
but
nice story.
Are they good for you at least?
Yeah, sure. They're a whole grain. They're another one of the grass family that's been domesticated, and it's only recently that they made it out of South America and Central America, and they're in health food stores.
Eddie, what can you tell me about amaranth flakes?
I haven't had it. It's not very popular among the people that visit the site. So there you go. Sorry.
Here's a good question. Gordon in Patterson, you're on.
Oh, yes. Could you tell me about when companies tried to market cereals overseas? Because American tastes are different. They probably have some unique and exotic products that they come up with. For example, in Japan, when Kellogg's tried to market cornflakes, it failed because, you know, the sogginess of the flakes in the milk. So they came up with rice flakes, which became a big hit because it has a cultural significance with the rice, and it never gets soggy in milk. Are any, like, strange cereals overseas that we've never seen?
A great question. What's the answer, Eddie?
Well, actually, rice flakes are kind of popular over here. There was a cereal called Rice Crinkles that was really popular in the 50s and 60s. Cereals, I mean, America, the U.S., we lead the way in cereals. If you go to England, you're going to look at the store shelves and see mostly kind of renamed cereals that we have here. Mm-hmm. But Yeah, Japan does have a few weird things, and they do love rice.
If I can just interject, proof that I don't have enough time to fill my days, someone once pointed out to me the Wikipedia site for breakfast. You just go to Wikipedia and put in breakfast. They have photographs of what people eat for breakfast in like 100 different countries. It is the most interesting thing and a wonderful way to waste your time. But are there cereals that are particularly more popular in one country in particular and not here?
I love that you spend your day the same way I do, looking at pictures of breakfast. The cereals that are popular in Europe and, well, worldwide sort of mimic what we've got going on here. I'd say with the exception of Weetabix and shredded wheat-type cereals are way more popular in Australia and England.
How big a business is cereal? I mean, how much do Americans spend on cereal? We know. Eddie?
It's a $7 billion business.
And how much of it is divided between Kellogg and General Mills?
They're the top. We also don't want to forget Post and Quaker. Kellogg's and General Mills are the definite leaders.
Amy in Manhattan, what's your question?
Hi. I had something more to say about nutrition. I'm a reader of Nutrition Action Health Letter, you know, the Center for Science and the Public Interest.
Did I mention that we were on NPR? Yes, I think. Go ahead.
You're not. Yes. You're WNYC, actually.
Yes.
They have run articles about the health claims cereals and how they will do things like they'll say, you know, whole grain, but the whole grains are mixed with refined grains, or they say honey sweetened, and it turns out it has honey is the fourth sweetener after corn syrup and sucrose and something else. And then they and of course, if you added those all together, the sugar would appear a lot higher on the ingredient list, so it makes it look as though they don't have as much sweetener. The best way to find out is to actually look at the nutrition facts and find out how many grams of sugar.
Now you have a issue about putting half and half on cereals as opposed to whole milk or skim milk.
No, I think. Oh, okay. I think the screen got. I think you misinterpreted that. Maybe. I was talking about that. I will cut. Like, I love a maple flavored cereal. But it does have a lot of sugar, so I kind of cut it by putting in unsweetened, like I use the Erewhon rice, these little rice nuggets.
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that.
She's absolutely right about that. I mean, as much as there are some shady claims on the boxes even today. I mean, not like in the days of 50% sugar, but that's universal in your supermarket. The cereal companies are just part of a bigger thing there.
We have been talking about breakfast cereal with Andy Smith, a food historian at New School University, most recent book, Eating History, 30 Turning Points in the Making of American Cuisine. Eddie Chavez of the Cereal Project, go Google that. And I'd just like to say that I think I was too cruel to Lucky Charms. I've been enjoying it more than
you've been
expected.
Eating a whole lot of them.
You know, I just like to say that I apologize to the Lucky Charms fans. So thank you, Andy,
thank you,
thank you, Eddie. Join guest host Miles O'Brien on Monday's show. He'll speak with Rebecca Traister about how the 2008 election was good for women, even though the election didn't give us our first female president or vice president. Then Nancy Brinker discusses how her sister Susie's death from breast cancer in 1977 changed the way the world talked about and treated breast cancer. Also, Stephen Kasher and artist Forrest Myers talk about the legendary New York space Maxis Kansas City. Plus, former NFL player, New York Jet, Don Maynard, on playing with the New York Titans, then the Super Bowl-winning New York Jets. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Stephen Valentino, Julia Corcoran, Blakeney Schick, and Kim Gittleson. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Matt Gurry, Andrew Katchen, A.D. Braun, and contributing producer Bonnie LaFave. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Jeffrey Toobin. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.